How tough are you? Whether we call it toughness, resilience, or grit, most of us think the way to accomplish difficult things is to bear down and power through. But our model is broken, and new research shows there's a smarter path to success in business, sports, and relationships. Best-selling author and sought-after performance coach Steve Magnus is out with a new book called Do Hard Things: Why We Get Resilience Wrong and the Surprising Science of Real Toughness. Our curator, Malcolm Gladwell, says it is a must-read for parents and coaches and anyone else looking to prepare for life's biggest challenges. Here's Steve to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, I'm Steve Magnus, the author of Do Hard Things: Why We Get Resilience Wrong and the Surprising Science of Real Toughness. I'm a writer and performance coach who's worked with Olympians, professional athletes across a variety of sports, as well as executives and entrepreneurs for how to up their game and perform when it matters most. I've spent the last 5 years studying resilience and how people tackle life's most challenging situations. I investigated sports stars who came through in the clutch, military, special forces, navigating the fog of war, elementary school teachers and parents cultivating adaptability in their young kids, and everyday people handling life's obstacles. When we combine their stories with the latest science and psychology, a few commonalities surface that show us there's a better way to handle whatever adversity, stress, or discomfort that we all face. Here are five takeaways from Do Hard Things. The first takeaway: our current model of toughness is broken. Acting tough isn't the same thing as being tough. We have a fundamental misunderstanding of what it means to be tough. We hold on to these ideas that better resemble a middle school football coach's ideal of toughness than reality. We mistake toughness for strength, power, and control. For too long, our definition of toughness revolved around a belief that the toughest individuals are ones who have thick skin, fear nothing, constrain any emotional reaction, and hide all signs of vulnerability. In other words, they're callous. Look at the language we use. We tell kids to man up. We tell people that they are soft or weak. We implore people to show no signs of weakness, no emotions, to be stoic. Corporate world, we prop up the companies who create slick-looking ads promoting values of inclusion and diversity, all while the inner workings of those organizations are littered with cultures of abuse, hostility, and harassment. We've essentially chosen the glitzy Instagram filter version of toughness. One based on appearance, but not actual substance. We've adopted the elementary school bully version of toughness, projecting strength, all while on the inside we're hurting and insecure. We've done this even though decades of research and some of the world's best performers tell us these old school methods actually backfire. Demanding parents and coaches lead to less disciplined, less persistent individuals. It also fails in the military, where the most resilient soldiers show high levels of emotional flexibility and understanding, as well as high levels of what we call humble confidence. It fails in sport, where athletes who fall for the old model tend to play out of a place of fear, which leads to worse performance. It's time to move towards a definition based on navigating discomfort by leaning in, paying attention, and creating space to take thoughtful action. Toughness is about responding, not reacting. It's about creating authentic connection and belonging, not leadership based on fear. For far too long, we've propped up the external version of toughness based on bluster and machismo, and neglected the real inner strength based on humility and equanimity. Real toughness is quiet and comes deep from within. It's about making the right choice under stress, uncertainty, and fatigue. It requires emotional control, cultivating the power to respond, not react, and thus making thoughtful decisions during pressure or stress-filled situations. Real toughness is born out of authentic self-security that is rooted in confidence, but not arrogance. Toughness is about figuring out how to thrive in the face of stress, adversity, and everyday challenge. It's not concerned with posturing. Now that we know where we got it wrong, let's go to takeaway number two. Understand your inner world, don't avoid it. If you're like me, you grew up in sports, learning that feelings and emotions were the enemies. Don't show emotion. Ignore what you feel and think. We send that same message outside of the sporting world, in the workplace and in parenting and basically everywhere. The reality, though, is our inner world isn't the enemy. It's got a job to do, protecting you. That could be from a physical threat, or it could be a psychological one, such as making sure your ego doesn't get bruised from failing during that job interview or performance. The reality is our feelings and emotions are messengers. It's our body's attempt to relay what's actually going on. It's not about shunning those feelings. It's about understanding the language that they are speaking. In the book, I outline research that shows that the best stockbrokers, endurance athletes, and military personnel are better at reading and understanding their inner signals. Think of a four-year-old. They throw tantrums and freak out. Why? Because they have little idea what the barrage of emotions they experience are when the teacher tells them to redo their work or that it's not good enough or when someone on the playground rejects them and turns them away. You see it in young kids' vocabulary. They explain every emotion as sad or sadness. Contrast that to adults who can hopefully differentiate and add nuance and not just see it as sadness, but frustration, shame, boredom, or maybe just feeling isolated. In psychology, they call this ability to add nuance to our emotional experiences interoception. It's the ability to understand the signals our body is sending. And experts in interoception don't ignore or push away those sensations. They learn to speak the language to understand them. It's only once we can speak that language that we can know how to deal with what we're experiencing. To see if that feeling of pain is a warning signal that injury is on its way, or if that feeling of shame is just like our crazy aunt or uncle on Facebook, an uninformed or misguided feeling that we should just scroll on by. Tough individuals are experts at listening to their body. Takeaway number 3. Bravado backfires. Embrace reality. Adopt a quiet, humble confidence. Imagine being dropped out into the woods. It's just you, maybe a friend or two, and you're asked to live off the land, forage, hunt, and basically survive. In the U.S. military, this is part of everyone's training. It's called SEER. Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. It's a simulated survival and POW experience that trains people to deal with this. And if you look at the research, some studies find that up to 96% of individuals experience dissociation. They experience the fog of war. Their perception goes haywire. They aren't sure what's going on or how to handle it. It's a stressful event. Yet, some handle it better than others. When I talked to individuals who went through this crucible, they reported the same thing. As one soldier put it to me, when there's a difference between what you project and what you're capable of, it all crumbles under stressful situations. If on the other hand, you're honest with yourself and acknowledge what your strengths and weaknesses are, what you're capable of, and what might scare you, then you can come to terms with what you're facing and deal with it. It's not bravado, it's having a humble confidence. A little bit of doubt keeps you sharp. The research backs up the soldier's claim. We want our perception of the difficulty of the challenge and our ability to handle it to be realistic and overlap. When we go in with too much bravado, it backfires. At the first sign of danger, or the first inkling that we may not be able to succeed, our brain jumps straight to freakout mode, to what's the point mode. Resilience is tied to having low levels of denial, as well as the ability to face our fears. It's this nice nuanced balance. Being able to encounter whatever challenge is thrown your way, not through delusion, but with realistic optimism, a belief that it may be difficult, but that we possess the skills and ability to get through whatever comes our way. In many ways, it's similar to the approach one of history's greatest leaders that led our country through its most challenging time took. Abraham Lincoln's speeches and letters are filled with hope for the future, that our country will one day be united, that slavery will one day end. But in the present moment, during the war, He was bitterly realistic. He had this kind of tragic optimism. We don't all need to go to that extreme, but we need that quiet, humble confidence to carry us through. The fourth takeaway is respond, don't react. When researchers at the University of Wisconsin compared how a group of expert meditators and novice average Joes handled a painful hot probe being applied to their wrist, initially there weren't many differences. Both rated the pain about the same, a 7 out of 10. But as they peered into the brains using fMRI technology, a difference emerged. The meditators' threat-detecting area in the brain, the amygdala, remained silent. Their novice counterparts' amygdala lit up, sounding the alarm. There's a threat here. And they dug further into what was going on. The meditators had, and I quote, a greater ability to fully embrace the feeling of pain and let go of the appraisal of what the pain meant to them. In other words, they learned to observe, but not scratch the itch. They were creating space to respond instead of instantly freaking out and reacting. It's not just meditators that have this ability. It's the child who doesn't jump from frustration to temper tantrum. The basketball player who doesn't jump from missing a shot to being overtaken by fear that she's lost her touch. The spouse who can listen to their significant other instead of yelling and screaming during an argument. Responding is keeping our head cool in the midst of chaos. How do we do that? We create space by learning to sit with discomfort. It's no surprise that expert meditators have honed this idea. They've practiced letting thoughts and feelings float on by for years. For the rest of us, we don't necessarily need to adopt a meditation ritual, though it can help. We just need to learn how to accept and sit with whatever discomfort we face. We can train this mental muscle in everyday situations. It's pausing when you feel that incessant urge to check your phone, or waiting to respond with outrage on the latest controversy on social media, or in listening to your family members express their political views at Christmas or Thanksgiving instead of jumping straight in and yelling and telling them they're wrong. You can be intentional on training your capacity to respond during a myriad of situations. Jump in a cold shower and practice relaxing instead of tensing up. Go for a hard run and have a calm conversation instead of catastrophizing and freaking out whenever the pain arises. Whenever you feel discomfort or the urge to react, pause. Take a few deep breaths and sit with that urge. You are training your mental muscle to turn online, to be in control, to be considerate, deliberate, and intentional with your response. In a world that pushes us towards reacting, slowing down so we can take deliberate action is a skill we desperately need. The fifth takeaway is real toughness and true success come from finding our purpose and satisfying our core needs. When under pressure, we often default to a controlling style of leadership. We dictate and demand, believing that we are taking charge of the situation and creating order out of disorder. This often backfires. When a team of organizational psychologists studied years of data in the NBA, they found that coaches' behavior predicted performance over not only just this season, but their career to come. In evaluating almost 700 players' performance, those who played under a coach who utilized what's called an abusive leadership style, those players saw a drop in performance. But the effects weren't limited to the year that they played under the demanding coach. The effects stretched to the player's entire career. After experiencing an incredibly demanding coach, the player's career trajectory shifted downwards a notch. Not only did their performance drop off, but the coach's style rubbed off on the players. For the rest of their career, those players had more technical fouls, an indicator of aggression. When you look at what actually does work over the long haul, from basketball to track to baseball, research clearly shows that athletes perform better and are more resilient when they have their basic psychological needs met. When an environment provides them with four things, they perform better: First, being supported, not thwarted. So having an input, a voice, and a choice. Second, the ability to make progress and grow. Third, feeling connected to the team and mission, feeling like they belong. And fourth, finding purpose or meaning. This isn't just in sports. In the workplace, a recent study of over 1,000 office workers showed that the strongest predictor of how well they dealt with the challenges of demanding work was whether they felt respected and valued by their managers. If they were listened to, they performed better. In other research, those who report feeling more autonomy and less micromanaging have higher levels of job satisfaction and performance. Toughness is amplified and trained when we have a choice, when we feel like we can make a difference, give people that chance. When we satisfy our basic needs, we create an environment where people play to win instead of playing not to lose. When fear dominates, we perform worse. Outliers can handle the fear, but for most of us, security gives us the freedom to perform. So while for decades we thought that callousness was the key to creating toughness, it turns out the real secret sauce is in being a decent human being who actually cares about others. Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you enjoy Do Hard Things. It's time to ditch this external facade, the fake toughness, and start developing real inner strength.
Thank you, Steve. That was Steve Magnus with five big ideas from Do Hard Things, Why We Get Resilience Wrong, and The Surprising Science of Real Toughness. If you enjoyed this, check out our book bite for The Art of Impossible, A Peak Performance Primer by Stephen Kotler. You can find it here in the app. I'm Rufus Griscom, encouraging you to do something hard today.